We're turning things around. It's episode 43 of For Our Edification. Thank you for joining this episode for Our Edification. I'm Eddie Francis. For Our Edification is brought to you by Edify Ventures, LLC, brand strategy for your people and you. Learn more at edifyventuresnola.com. And for past episodes of For Our Edification, go to eddiefrancis.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, so let's say you hear something on the podcast that kind of hits you. Well, make sure you email me and tell me about it, eddie@eddiefrancis.com. I would love to hear from you, and I would love to share your thoughts on another podcast. And so in this episode, we have a pretty interesting character by the name of George Sedbury. On social media, he goes by the White George. He's an Arkansas native, and he took a rather unusual path, shall we say, to becoming an ally of the Black community. This is somebody who loves Black history, and he loves HBCUs. And if you've seen him on social media, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Here's a conversation with George.
The views and opinions expressed on For Our Edification do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the hosts, guests, or any entities with which we are affiliated.
Joining me on For Our Edification is George Sedbury. All right, so maybe you don't know the name, but you will in just a second. And George is somebody who I ran across on Instagram. So this is how you know the name. So I'm on Instagram doing my usual thing. Not doom scrolling. I don't doom scroll. I actually entertainment scroll. So I'm going through all of my entertainment, all that good stuff. And I see this guy, and he is pumping up HBCUs, right? He's a white dude. No big deal. It happens, right? We have lots of supporters. And then there's another HBCU on his feed, and another, and another, and another, and another. And then as it turns out, I look at his handle, and his handle is the White George. And I decide to look him up a little bit, see if some more information, and he's going to tell you about himself in a second. But I found George's information to be intriguing, and I had to know more about him. Just as fate would have it, I'm about to inbox him on Instagram, and he winds up inboxing me because he has some questions about branding. And so we had a great conversation. And that led to me saying, "Now you got to be on the podcast because you have a great story and I want to hear your story." So, ladies and gentlemen, let me bring on George Sedbury. Thank you so much for joining me on For Our Edification. How are you, man?
Man, I'm doing well. How about you, Daddy? How are you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. So you have become known on social media, especially among those in the HBCU community, for your support of historically Black colleges and universities. So I gotta know, how did you become such a supporter?
I'm a big history geek, and you know, I've studied Black American history actually for a long time because of the stories. But a common thread I saw with so many of these men and women attended historically Black college universities, and I became really fascinated by it. And I spent a couple of months researching, like months. I was researching, I mean, every school, reading on them, how they got started. And I just realized there was something beautiful here that I didn't know anything about and nobody I knew anything about. So I had to tell the story, and it's changed my life.
So you started going through this history. And then one of the things I did notice going through Instagram is that you also you are pretty much in the civil rights history as well. And you tell a lot of stories about Black folks and a lot of did you knows. I mean, so what led you to that even to telling all these stories about Black folks?
I grew up in Arkansas. My grandparents grew up with John H. Johnson when they were little kids in Arkansas City, Arkansas. I've known that story since I was a kid. And I told that story and went viral on TikTok. And so I was like, I know more of these. And it just kind of morphed into finding a way to tell a story to people in my community so they can learn. But I want to say it with respect and show admiration to people in the community that these members belong to. It's kind of a dual purpose. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of naturally became that. And I'm a storyteller, and it just turned out to be one of the most beautiful stories nobody knows about.
Yeah. And I mean, you even got to a point where you tell the story of Uncle Nearest, which was one that I personally endorsed that story. But But I thought that was really cool that even with Uncle Nearest, and for those who don't know, Uncle Nearest is a whiskey. It is a black owned whiskey brand. But even in it, to the point of telling that story, I thought it was really, really fascinating. What I found most interesting about you, though, is that you had a huge turnaround in your life. And so talk about that. Talk about this turnaround. Talk about what happened, what led you to it, and what got you through it, too.
Well, growing up in a small town in Arkansas, I grew up, you know, with a racist ideology. Like most stereotypes you would think apply to me did. And I grew up that way because I was surrounded by it, lived in an echo chamber, didn't really know any different. And it wasn't through some life experiences, mainly prison, was a veil pulled back, and I started to see a segment of society that was treated differently than me, despite growing up down the street. Mm-hmm. I saw how the law wasn't applied fairly. I saw the bail issues. I saw people getting screwed over in court who couldn't defend themselves. I saw them throwing prosecutors use years of men's lives as a way to keep score and get promotions. Whether it be 10, 30, or 40 years, they don't care. It's just a number to them. But these men and women are going to be locked away for that long. And I just started to see the world wasn't fair like I thought it was. Hmm. You know, you see Make America Great Again. I'm still kind of, we try to make America great. You know, like, I realize the propaganda and, you know, all the things we're taught, this patriotic stuff, is a great cover-up. Mm-hmm. You know, for the great Ponzi scheme that is racism.
Yeah. And this may sound cliche, but it just sounds to me like at some point you started to see people as people, and you just started asking yourself, well, why is that set of people being treated that way? But then the set of people that I associate with, we're treated completely differently. I mean, would it be fair to even apply that cliche?
Oh, absolutely. But I learned how to love people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Love a person for being a person, not segment them based on the color of their skin. Mm-hmm. Color to me represents culture and heritage. When people say they don't see color, I call BS. We all see color. It's just, what does color mean to you? Mm-hmm. You know, it just tells me these are my neighbors. It's like having five brothers in a house. No five boys are the same. Just like communities in America. We're all brothers and sisters, but we're all different. Mm-hmm. We're all the same family. And I started to see us as a family as opposed to separate sections of society. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't always get along. We'll go fight, but we should stick together like brothers and sisters do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. How have people accepted you? As you've gone from HBCU to HBCU, what has it been like? You walk up to a group of people and then you start to talk to them. But then by the end of the conversation, how does that go? You got to walk me through that meeting and how all of that fans out.
Well, first off, Black American women give great hugs. I'm going to tell you that right now. They hold tight. They hold on tight. You know, I would say 99% acceptance. Yeah, I've been kind of overwhelmed by how much, you know, because I grew up racist. So I have that in the back of my head, you know, like, and I'm open about it, but I still know people are going to judge me about it. Instead, I've been shown mercy and grace and love for being open. Mm. And then I realized that transparency has a lot of value, you know, and because so many people, I'm not racist, I'm not this, I'm not that. I mean, if you got to project that, then I start to question it. And I thought I would take a different tact. Yeah, I was flawed. So, you know, my mistakes were out there. You know, I'm an ex-con, I'm a felon. Anybody can find it, and I own up to it. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to run from it or hide from it. And the other side, well, the only hate I get is usually from white people. People in my community.
Interesting.
They, for some reason, get perturbed by this. I just posted a video about these two young women from New Orleans, Cassia Johnson and Nakia Jackson, two high schoolers that solved a 2,000-year-old math problem with the Pythagorean theorem.
From St. Mary's Academy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And Pythagorean theorem was used to solve using circular logic. The proof does the problem. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they found a way to actually show that it was legit. But so many white people were offended, I called them Black American girls. Like, why do you got to say race? Why do you got – I'm like, really? They're geniuses.
Yeah.
And instead of complimenting, you're critiquing because they identify as Black American. Why wouldn't I show respect to that?
Yeah.
But that actually offends some people. It just blows my mind.
Do they explain why is it they get offended by the fact you point out that they're Black?
Because they said we're all one race, the human race. Why does color matter? Those same tropes that you brought out. Because, you know, I don't believe these people saying it are like racist hardcore. I just think they're tone deaf, like on an unbelievable level.
Interesting. You know,
they mean well. They mean well, but they don't really understand the implications of what they're saying when they say it.
Okay, so the nuance here is that these are folks who are trying to make the point that we're all people, but they're just taking the wrong path to try to make that point. That's what you seem to be observing there.
Yeah, you know, and I noticed a lot of times my videos, I want to show respect, mm-hmm. but I want to show others how to respect, mm-hmm. because there is a distinct difference between the two. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We don't show we can show respect equally, but we show respect in different ways. I want to be respected in one way. You might want to be respected in another. And you've got to learn how a person wants to be respected so you can be respected in return.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if we all have that attitude, is looking, how can I respect them the way they want? And in turn, you get that. I think we'd all benefit that way. So I try to show people a different way.
So I have to go back to HBCUs for a quick second. Mm-hmm. How many have you been to so far?
23.
Okay. Oh, so you got a ways to go.
Yeah. In 9 months, though.
Yeah, but that's not. Yeah, that was. Oh, yeah, that's pretty good in 9 months. That's pretty good. So, I'm not gonna ask you your favorite. It's an unfair question.
All of them.
I know. And there's always a wrong answer, by the way, when it comes to this. Unless the alumni from the particular HBCU went to hear it, there's always a wrong answer. But can you name maybe two or three that stand out to you and why?
Tennessee State.
Right answer.
I forgot you got your master's there.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, about that.
Tell me about the land of the golden sunshine.
Well, we first experienced Tennessee State. We went and visited the campus. We went there in Fisk.
Yeah.
And then we had a chance to go see them play Notre Dame this year up here, mm-hmm. in South Bend, where history was made at that game. I don't know if you know this. Notre Dame asked Dr. Reginald McDonald, the band director, to play the national anthem with the Fighting Irish Band.
Yeah.
And then when the halftime show came, they let Tennessee State close it. Notre Dame has never let anybody close their halftime before, much less an HBCU. And it's the first time they played an HBCU.
Yes, history.
So that was fantastic. And then we've gone to the campus. We've got to know some of these students, alumni, faculty. It just kind of feels like home. Morehouse, same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've had young students there tell me that they came there because it's safe. You know, it's people within their own culture. But to be a middle-aged white guy with a Hall of Fame dad bod and to be accepted there, it's overwhelming, you know, that I can connect with them. Tuskegee, I just loved. I love Tuskegee. I love the history of Tuskegee. You know, I love George Washington Carver, Booker T. Washington. I mean, there's so much history there. You know, it's insane. There's obviously, I got to go to both HUs. I mean, there's a whole lot more we got to go to. But Simmons College of Kentucky, another one few people know about.
Yeah, yeah.
We love Simmons.
Yeah.
I've had the PLC in Detroit.
Yeah, I've actually had the pleasure of talking to their president, the president of Simmons in Kentucky. Yeah, I have. And then you just mentioned PLC in Detroit.
Yeah, that's an amazing school.
Yeah. Now, that's one a lot of people might not know about because they recently reopened, if I'm not mistaken, right?
2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Pencil Lewis College of Design.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unlike any other school we've been to.
Okay. All right. You are listening to For Our Edification. I'm Eddie Francis, and we're talking to George Sedbury. And George is someone who is an HBCU advocate, and he's a lover of history. And I wanted to talk to him because he has this very interesting story about how he got to this point where he wanted to become an HBCU advocate. And let's talk about George, the leader, right now, because I think we're all in our own right leaders in some way, but you are definitely someone. If you decide you're going to advocate for somebody, anything, you got to know that you are leading something. And one of the things I'm interested in is your personal leadership. So what have you been done, especially given the story that you just told us, as someone who served time, as someone who has a racist past? What do you do now to invest in your own growth and development?
Pray. My relationship with God is probably one of the greatest things I've ever done to invest in myself, is to learn to serve others, mm-hmm. and not myself. Mm-hmm. If I could tell you, that's probably the greatest thing I'll do to invest in me because I win either way. I'm an avid reader. I love conversation with people. I love to learn about them. And I feel like I can glean so much from each person I meet. Mm-hmm. And I can take that and I can internalize it. And if it gives me a new degree of perspective, then I'm the winner. So, and I also realize I've always been a very fearless, outspoken person. You know, I'm sort of a natural leader everywhere I've been, whatever I've done. But I've learned to lead with humility. I've learned to stand on people's backs. You sit on their shoulders. There is a big difference between the two. You empower other people. You lead that way. You know, I've ran large sales teams, 200 people teams before. I was a counselor. I was a fireman. You know, I was everything to them but a boss, so to speak. Mm. But that's what they needed from me. Yeah. I had to put them first, and we all did well when I put them first. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a leader to me is selfless as much as you can be.
So given that is your attitude about leadership, that you believe in leading with humility, when you see a lot of the leadership that we have today, whether it's, you know, throughout the country, even if it's in a private sector, we see a lot of people who are doing it for themselves. And so when mm-hmm. you see that, what are your thoughts?
I think there are a lot of times insecure people who project their own insecurities and inadequacies on other people. Mm-hmm. I think when they see themselves, their weaknesses in other people, they try to hold them down. You know, they don't like what they see that they possess. You know, and it's, I just saw something about a study they did asking people, if you can make $100,000 a year, but your coworkers make 200, or if you can make 50,000 and your coworkers only make 25, which would you take? Half the people took option B. As long as they made more than somebody, they didn't care. Hmm. And that's kind of an appalling statistic when you think about it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's people think that if it comes off, if I could put something on your plate, it came off mine. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think a lot of that selfishness comes from. Hmm. People are so desperate to cling to power and money.
Yeah. Yeah. When you think about serving time, and I'm really curious about this. When you think about that, how did that affect you as a person?
I mean, it took me a long time to realize, except I have PTSD from it. I saw things that I would hope nobody would ever have to see. Isolation, the loneliness, the pressure, the evil. I walked among pure evil. People don't realize what evil feels and looks like. I can feel that evil. Mm. And you're trying to survive, you know. And prison's a community, too. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a role in the barracks, but you'd always get along. And problems are solved with violence you have to use cunning skills. And prison prepared me for this. I mean, I'll straight up tell you, prison, I learned to be okay with myself.
Hmm. Wow.
I just spent a lot of time with myself. Mm-hmm. And I learned to be okay with that.
What does that mean to be okay with yourself? I think that's an intriguing statement.
I once spent an entire weekend, I think I just wore a pair of gym shorts. I don't own a TV, so I had no TV, didn't listen to a radio, didn't look at my phone. I cooked, did whatever. I never left the house. I stayed in complete silence for the weekend. I didn't set out to do it, but once I realized I'd been doing it, I just kept going. And I found comfort in that silence. Mm-hmm. You know, I found I was okay with my thoughts.
Mm.
And a lot of people can't do that. They have to have noise and distraction. And I learned to just be okay. Because I was forced to.
You know, that's I have a cousin who actually, he's a mentor, and he took a group of young men out. And there is here in the southeastern Louisiana area, there are retreat grounds, and one is run by the Jesuits. And there is nothing but silence for a couple of days. You put your phone away, no electronics, no devices, nothing but silence for a couple of days. And he said that he took a group of young men out for like maybe under a day or something like that. And he said one night he just heard this screaming and he thought that something was going on. And he went out and he saw this kid just sitting there just screaming. And he said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" He said, "I can't stand it. It's just too quiet." And he said that this young man, who probably is maybe in his late 20s or early 30s by now, he said this young man just could not adjust to being alone with his thoughts, and he could not adjust to the silence. And so that's pretty profound that you bring that up about being okay with yourself, because I agree with you. I don't think a lot of us can do that. I think a lot of people have a lot of trouble just sitting in silence and listening to listen, to actually listen.
And you miss out on a lot. I don't think you can really gain enough perspective on things if you're constantly distracted. I mean, you know, I spent almost a month in isolation where the lights never went off by myself in a tiny cell. So I had no choice, no Bible, no nothing. And started losing my mind a little bit in there. But, you know, I learned how to be disciplined in my mind. Mm-hmm. I learned to do mental exercises, you know, just goofy stuff. Yeah. But I learned to just continue to keep my mind engaged, make up games, make up, you know, I'm walking across America. That's where that came from, being in that tiny little cell. You know, I drove to Dallas once, 5 hours, didn't ever turn on the radio. I just enjoyed the road, the noise of the road.
Yeah. I've actually done something similar. So I have to ask also, you know, because one of the things about me is that I've had the chance to meet people who serve time, and my heart really, really, you know, goes out to people when they get out and they need to readjust. And so when you talk about people having to readjust when they get out, especially Black men, what is something, if you could walk up to every single one and say, okay, listen, this is how you kind of get yourself back into the groove. What's something that you would say to them, or something that you have said to them?
You know, a lot of times we get out of prison and we don't realize we walk out unencumbered. All of our debts are gone because they've all been charged off or written off. A lot of relationships, people have abandoned you. Like, you are literally unencumbered now. Like, that, a lot of that yoke is off your neck. And while we're limited by what society will let us do in most cases, I think when people realize that they have a level of freedom that free world people don't have, and we got to figure out a car and a place to live and a job, those are huge stresses, right? But we're not carrying that day-to-day baggage like they are. You know, we have to walk out of hell, right? And into the free world. And we don't have that same pressure like that. So we eventually get ourselves into debt and go through that same headache. But yeah, you walk out with a gift. Nobody expects anything from you when you're next con. And that means the sky's the limit.
Wow. So you really are in a position where you get to rebuild your life, but you get to do it with a clean slate that nobody even realizes you have, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I tell people it's prison, they're usually shocked.
Yeah.
I didn't set out to rebuild it this way. It's just kind of the path God put in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I just figured I'd work, but that wasn't enough for me.
Yeah.
The other thing about silence without distractions, you start to see the way the world really works around you. And I think that plays a bigger part in what I do than I realize, because I had that time to self-reflect and be introspective. And I started to see all the things I ignored.
So getting back to your growth and your development, clearly you've gotten the opportunity to tell people your story. You have gone to all these folks who have said, okay, who is this dude? You've gotten a good sister hugs. How do you think you have inspired others through your growth and development? Has anyone said, hey, George, when I take a look at you, when I hear you tell your story, when I hear the things you say, when I look at your Instagram, this is what it does to me. Have you gotten any feedback about that?
Actually, yeah. I mean, just today I read a message from a gentleman who said he was light-skinned, and he kind of caught it from both ends, white and black American community, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And he said, like, watching some of the videos has helped him kind of look at things differently. It kind of caught me off guard. You know, I was like, wow, that I had a tribal elder in Kenya message me that he was showing my videos on his tablet on Saturday mornings to kids in the village because they didn't have electricity. And he wanted to show them, you know, a visual representation of Black American history. That one kind of got me, you know, like, it's literally around the world.
So, that being said, I want to get back to a fun question. Okay. Bucket list. Do you have an HBCU bucket list item by any chance?
One single thing?
We can group it. We can group it. Not one single thing. Because again, I don't want to get you in trouble. So yeah, we can group it.
Well, first off, I want a selfie with Coach Eddie George at Tennessee State. That's probably near the top of my list. I've been trying to get my selfie with Coach George.
That's a good one. I'll put that one on mine. Yeah, go ahead.
I've been by them on the field, you know, and I just couldn't get it. But to see all the campuses, to say I've met students, to be able to have a conversation with students from each, because I feel like doing what I do, I get to see a much bigger picture than a lot of students and stuff who only go to one school or visit a couple. Like, I'm seeing how distinctly different they are and competitive, but all part of the same tight-knit family.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that perspective because I'm going and seeing and interacting. I'm not just showing up. I'm sitting down having fried chicken Wednesdays, you know, when we go visit.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm the turd in the punch bowl everywhere I go. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So George, I would say this is how I think a lot of folks from HBCUs know you are legit. Number one, you referred to Tuskegee as Skeegee at one point. And then the other way, Fried Chicken Wednesday, that is a really good way to tell that you have actually been to HBCU campuses. So, you know, I'll give you two more to think about. All right. Bayou Classic. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You got to do Bayou Classic. Another one I would say, and I haven't done this yet, and that is the greatest homecoming on earth at North Carolina A&T. Yeah, that's one that, you know, maybe you and I bump into each other at G-Hope. We'll do that.
At both.
Yeah, at both. Yeah.
At the Bayou too.
Yeah.
You're down in New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to go to the home. I obviously want to see all the homecomings. I want to experience those, but it'll take a few years to do it for scheduling.
Yeah.
You know, I just had a phone call yesterday with a professor from North Carolina A&T who wants me to speak to her students. So it's ironic you brought that up.
But oh, wow.
I hear all about the GEHO all the time. I need to go or Hamptons. But I also heard Skeegee has one of the coolest homecomings, biggest homecomings. I've heard that that's pretty big, too. So I got to see them all before I can make up my mind.
You know what? I've heard a lot about Skeegee's homecoming. I haven't been yet. I have been to Hamptons, though. And Hampton, so a lot of people don't realize this because Hampton has turned it up in the past couple of years. Hampton used to be a very laid back homecoming. And I went when it was kind of a laid back variety. But when I went last year, man, and it was different and it was dope. It was cool. I loved it. I joked with my wife, who was a Hamptonian. We were standing in line for a Friday night thing with the alumni. And I was listening to all these folks around me talking. And I said, does Hampton not recruit anywhere outside of New York, New Jersey, or Philly? Because I'm hearing all these New York, New Jersey, Philly accents around me. But everybody was just so cool and very loving, too. Very loving environment. So I definitely hope you get a chance to check out Hampton. So I do have to ask you this, and this is something that I like to ask everybody when it comes down, and we might wind up having to break this down into a couple with you because you have a lot there. So let's say that you are a skywriter and you can write one message to the nation. You write that message in the sky, what would it be?
Three words: kindness is gangster.
Kindness is gangster. I like it.
Kindness is gangster.
I like it. This is an original. Okay, I have to, you know what? I wish I had the DJ horn. So, there we go. All right. Now, we got to let you talk about your walk across America. What are you doing? I hope you're conditioned for it. But what exactly are you doing? You're just walking by, because this is your way this is your way of paying it forward. What are you doing? Tell us about it.
Oh, there's a lot of things, and I think in a way it's going to help heal just my soul, just that time alone, the meeting the people. I'm doing it because I want to draw attention and respect to historically black colleges and universities, as well as awareness, because walking from New York to California, 3,000 miles, I'm going to walk across a big swath of America that doesn't even know what an HBCU is. Mm-hmm. I know there are students in the black American culture out there who don't know what it is. They have no exposure to it. So when you got this, you know, 300-pound white dude walking across there with Tennessee State or Miles College, you know, I want people to ask, where is Miles, you know, or where is Benedict College, and have conversations. You know, so I was at a career fair or college fair this weekend, ironically, and I met two high school students. They're both huge kids, 15. And we were talking about schools, and I'm like, have you checked out Miles College? That's probably one of the best sports programs in HBCU. They had no idea.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So I hope to. And I connected them with somebody in the sports department so that they could, you know, 15 years old, you want to start looking. But I want people to ask. I want people to have conversations with me. Yeah. You know, I want people in my community to say, why do you fall in love with HBCU? So maybe I can get them to help see what I see. Mm-hmm. It just creates a way to have a conversation with a lot of people.
So the way people can follow that and the way people can connect with you on Instagram or TikTok, and the handle is The White George. Definitely, man, I appreciate you. I appreciate you telling your story. I think your story is inspirational. But then I also think that a lot of people can learn from you, and people don't even realize who they can learn from at any time. And I appreciate that you are bringing those stories to folks, to let them know that there are people who they didn't know that they could learn from, throughout history. So I appreciate you, man.
Oh man, thank you very much.
All right. So listen, you know, we gotta find a way to make this happen. Buy your classic, Jiho. We gotta find out how we can run into each other. And I know you're gonna be coming through New Orleans. So you come to New Orleans, you got a tour of three HBCUs. I got you. Just let me know.
There's only four in Louisiana, right? Xavier, Dillard, Southern, and Grambling.
So we do have Xavier, Dillard, Southern University at New Orleans in New Orleans. And then you have Southern in Baton Rouge. You have the Law Center, the Ag Extension, and you have Grambling in North Louisiana. But you also have Southern University Shreveport in North Louisiana as well. So there you go. Yeah, you got a few. You definitely got a few, man. But again, George, I appreciate you. George Sedbury, HBCU advocate, history buff, all of that good stuff. And he's going to become a professional walker.
A skinny walker.
Yeah, no, maybe I need to join you for part of it. George, thanks a lot for joining me on For Our Edification.
Thank you for having me, Eddie.
Many thanks to George Sedbury for joining me on this episode of For Our Edification. Find out more about him by checking out the show notes. Follow him on TikTok and Instagram. As a matter of fact, at the time that this podcast was actually published, I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, but by the time it was published, he had visited Hampton. And let's just say that George had a good time. He had checked out a new member presentation, and it looks like he got lots of hugs. So, George, live it up, my friend, and thank you so much for joining me. All right, check out past episodes of For Our Edification at eddiefrancis.com, on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, I'm only asking you to do three things: download, give feedback, and share. For my favorite Hamptonian, Dr. Helene Malik Francis, I'm Eddie Francis. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of For Our Edification.